Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Coaching Connect. Welcome to Coaching Connections. I'm Constance Hine with Horizons in Learning, and author of Coaching for Success. I've been working in the early childhood field for over 30 years. In the last 20 years, I've had the distinct pleasure of working with many programs across the country and have met many people who are contributing so much to deepen and broaden our coaching practices and policies in our field. My passion is to create interactive coaching learning communities where people can cross-pollinate their ideas, experiences, and successes, as well as their challenges. And this show is a forum for these leading thinkers and practitioners in the field to do just that. Welcome to Coaching Connections. Welcome to our show today. This is Constance Hine. I'm really pleased to be able to have our guest speakers. We have three guest speakers today, and I'd like to welcome Margie Carter, who is the founder of Harvest Resources Associates, along with Deb Curtis, who is unable to join us today. But she did, and we also have her colleagues, Wendy Sivadonis and Debbie Lebo, who are also here with us. And all of them have been early childhood teachers, teacher educators, and consultants for a number of years. And they've been promoting reflective teaching and an expanded vision of quality for children, families, and staff to get what they deserve. And I'm so happy to have you all here. Welcome.
Thanks for having us.
My
Thanks
pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
So today I've asked Margie and Wendy and Debbie to share with us their thinking and practices about coaching and how they are currently fostering critical reflection through coaching with educators with whom they're working. And I thought, Margie, perhaps you could set the stage for our listeners for how you think about professional development and your passions for providing a deeper impact than what teachers typically are offered. And perhaps you could also start with clarifying some of the terms you'll be using today in your talking and that you use in the field.
Thank you, Constance. I'm really glad we can have this conversation because I know we all share this passion for coaching teachers. And it's particularly salient today because our field has developed to the point of getting a lot more recognition at the policy level than we have had in years past. Our hard work in that arena is paying off. And we now have any number of standards and criteria that outline the components of quality. So we have much to be proud of. My real passion is trying to figure out how all this hard work that's gone on is useful to the everyday teacher of young children. And I think that's where coaching comes in. Coaching is becoming a buzzword in the field now. And in my mind, we need to look closely at what we mean by coaching. I know in a lot of the QRIS systems, they are embedding coaches to go out and work in centers as people use the rating scales. That's a different way of thinking about coaching than I have. It's more about technical assistance than supporting teachers as learners, which is more my definition of coaching. And I believe that we cannot just keep heaping more and more regulations and requirements and standards on teachers without giving them the opportunity to stop and think about what do these have to do with my everyday life with young children and their families and my colleagues. And in the work that we've been doing at Harvest Resources Associates, we've come to think of coaching as needing to have a very strong pedagogical component. That word is a bit of a mouthful, but it really has to do with focusing on the teaching and learning process. And I'll just toss it over to Debbie because I think she is really embedded in this notion of how do we coach teachers in a pedagogical focus, not just a get in compliance focus.
Well, thanks, Margie. I think in our work at Harvest Resources, we find ourselves trying to shift the conversation about professional development from one that has been traditionally focused on what teachers know or don't know or should know, to a conversation about how teachers think and how they learn and how they grow. And in our work, as Margie was saying, a lot of what we see out there currently that is called coaching seems to be working from a deficit model. So it's assuming that something in the teacher is lacking, which, you know, lacking skills, lacking some sort of knowledge, and the coach's role is to get in there with the teacher, to fill them up with knowledge, to fix them up, and to put them out on the road, so to speak. But when we think about it, that we think that model's coming from a pretty low image of what it means to be an early childhood teacher. It assumes that there is some set of limited skills and knowledge that anyone can learn, and you're good to go at being a teacher. And for us, we think at Harvest Resources, we look at teaching as a profession. And of course there's a place for skills, and of course there's a place for knowledge. But those skills and knowledge have to be used in a context of really complex daily decision-making in the action with children. So if that's true, and when we look at teachers from that strong model, professional learning and coaching need to be ongoing processes, and they need to be about supporting teachers in reflecting on the day-to-day happenings, what's going on in their classroom, of studying their observations of children's learning, and articulating their thinking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I know that one of the components that many of the guests we've had on here is exactly what you said, the ongoing process. And I think that also is one of the challenges our field has had, is not really allowing for that ongoing experience rather than the one-time thing. And I think, Wendy, you had a great term you used. Why don't you share with the listeners the, you know, the term I know you've used?
Well, thanks, Constance. You know, Margie and I, we were talking one evening about professional development dollars and the best way to spend those, and coined the phrase drive-through training. And I think that when we have thought about the traditional approach to professional development, very often that banking method, the banking model, came up about having to fill the empty vessels as quickly as possible, having that expert come in and deliver the goods, so to speak, and that the feeling was the more workshops you took on a variety of topics, the better equipped you were, and that you got these, you know, a quick refresher or a booster and some new tips and techniques, and off you went to the next session. And a big piece of that was being grateful that you just got the requirements taken care of. But what we've come to believe, and what we've seen that has really begun to transform the field, is that because we recognize the complexity of teachers' work and the complexity of children's learning, that time is of the essence. And in that article, you know, Dewey was quoted by saying that he said we need time to pay attention to how children learn, not what you want to teach them. And so I think our approach to professional development gives us the opportunity to really study and research one topic over time with teachers versus doing the quick two-hour one-time training, which doesn't give them an opportunity to have the depth that's required and the time to reflect that's mm-hmm. required. And so it means a shift in our thinking, but we have seen a lot of success in this and, you know, keep moving forward in that direction.
Yeah. That reminds me of that William Butler Yeats quote, that education is not the filling of a pail, but the lighting of a fire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that we have so many of our models, you know, even our educational system, how we were educated has that feeling that somehow the knowledge or the skills, as you said, is what's holy. And at least in my experience, it's why coaching is so valuable, is because I found information alone does not change people. And, you know, that's where the coaching coming in and helping people really, what's going to help them know, I think, as Margie said, what to do with the information that they have.
Right.
I wonder, Margie, if this would be a good time for you to share a little bit about our conversations you've been sharing with me about protocols and some of the other tools that you're using to actually foster this deeper reflective practice, and, you know, how you're structuring when people are in that longer, allowing longer times to reflect, how you're helping facilitate that.
Yes, well, you know, I think the first tools that all educators have to bring to their work is a big open heart and mind, and using their eyes and ears as tools. And to me, that's a starting place. We're often rushing around following the clock and following schedules, and we're not using the inherent tools that we have with us. So I always tell teachers that's one of the first things we have to do. And we have so little time, actually, with all the tasks. I say we, those who are actually practicing children's teachers, have so little time to stop and think, because there are many demands on us, that I think we have to get very focused in how do we discipline ourselves to think through what's unfolding before our eyes when it's happening on the spot, and then when we can gather ourselves away from the children and reflect on what's happened. And to me, having some kind of a protocol, some kind of a set of questions of that we cycle through in our mind is a useful tool to bring to our thinking about our work. It's very different than a checklist. It's really a process of asking ourselves some particular questions that help us uncover the deeper significance in what's going on with the children, and certainly what's going on inside of us. So in the protocol that we have been trying to shape for early childhood educators, one of the big areas that we talk about is, what do you know about yourself that is influencing the situation, why you're reacting the way you are and what you're doing? And we have several categories like that, knowing yourself and paying attention to the environment and that kind of idea. And we've shaped these into what we call a thinking lens. And I think we can give you some idea about what our thinking lens looks like, which is really a set of areas to ask yourself some questions in, and we give some initial prompts around that. And you can also find the concept of protocol increasingly used in the K through 12 field of education. We've been very influenced by the work that is in the book The Power of Protocols, which we studied early on together. It was not meant for early childhood education, but it gave us a jumping-off point to begin to think about this ourselves. And Wendy, why don't you talk a little bit about our thinking lens in particular? That might be useful for the listeners.
Thanks, Margie. So the protocol, as Margie said, that we've been using is a thinking lens for reflection and inquiry. And it really has given teachers that we've been working with the opportunity to really think about their work in a deeper, more disciplined, focused, reflective way. These set of questions that we ask around these areas, teachers have said how much they've appreciated being asked what they think versus being told what to do. And the teachers say that the protocol helps them to rediscover their voices, which I have to say is so heartening for us to hear, and they feel it really validates their work. And for many teachers, they say they hear themselves in a different way and feel so much more professional in terms of their work. So as Margie said, the thinking lens uses a set of questions that ask them to really take a look at knowing themselves, helping them seek the child's point of view, considering multiple perspectives, because the work that we do is so collaborative with families and other coworkers. And it also allows them to consider what the opportunities and possibilities for next steps are. And one of the values I would say that we hold at Harvest Resources is we know that when teachers become thoughtful, competent decision makers, it really allows them to take leadership and to transform their practice and therefore transform the profession. So we have found it extremely successful working with teachers in small groups and even one-on-one.
Well, Debbie, I'm wondering if you could talk a little
Hello? I think I lost Constance.
I think I did too.
I think I did too. Are you there, Constance? Well, this will be interesting. I wonder what we do now.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Does she come back to us or do we call her back?
Why don't Debbie, why don't you try calling back in and see if the British lady lets you in, and then we'll each come back in.
Okay, sounds good.
So you're still there, right, Margie?
I am. We're just hoping we're not broadcasting and Constant is off the air.
Uh-oh.
We don't know what happened here. Technology has not clued us in.
No.
So maybe, let's see, should we try to hang up as well and call back in, do you think?
Yeah, why not? Let's do it.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Bye.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello? This is
Hi.
Wendy.
Well, we seem to have had a technological interruption to the call. I'm sorry, I dropped off. I don't know if anybody else did.
Yes, I think we all dropped off.
We all dropped
yes.
off, and now we're back on. Margie, you there?
I am, yes.
Debbie, you there?
I am here.
Okay, and Wendy, you're there.
I am.
Well, stuff happens. So let's just continue our conversation. I think Wendy, you were talking more about your thinking lens. Is there anything else you wanted to add to that before I was posing a question to Debbie? I'm not sure quite where
no,
we
I
got
think
interrupted.
That's fine. I think Debbie was queued up exactly to go right into that.
Okay, so you heard that question to share more about how you're supporting the coaches, the agents of change who work with the teachers using your method.
Sure, yes, this is Debbie. So as Wendy was saying, some of the work that we're doing right now at Harvest Resources is working with teachers directly and doing coaching work with them using the Thinking Lens protocol. And then another big piece of our work is working with coaches working with groups of coaches and helping them to also use a protocol, the Thinking Lens protocol, and practice and understand this model of coaching, which is, again, not trying to fix people, but helping teachers think through their work. And we one way of looking at this form of coaching is looking at it as coaching as a critical friend. The research can refer to that role as being a critical friend. And it's not critical in the sense of criticizing somebody, but a critical friend is used as a meaning a trusted person, somebody who's essential, critical as in essentials, somebody who's essential in helping you think through your work. And that's how we look at coaching, that it's a critical person to help think through their work. So being a critical friend isn't easy, And a lot of us haven't had any experience with that model. So we work with coaching groups to help them practice using protocols, studying observation of children, helping them increase their own self-awareness, and helping them develop questions and provocations that uncover teacher thinking.
Uh-huh. And are you finding that the, you know, my experience has been that so many people, both the coaches as well as the teachers themselves, really just haven't had much exposure to learning how to learn or learning how to think critically. And are you finding that is true in your work as well, and that this method in particular is helpful with that?
Absolutely. I think that one of the challenges in using this model is that a lot of us haven't had experience in really having time to think through aspects of our work without there being a right answer that we're looking for, but looking for multiple answers, looking for at multiple perspectives. So it does take practice and it takes discipline, but tools like the Thinking Lens Protocol and other protocols can really help people focus in and learn to do that fairly quickly. And we find that once people do practice, it becomes a much easier thing to do and a very welcome thing to do.
Yeah. I find much of the same out there. It's really infrastructure for how to do thinking. So, you know, I've been reflecting some since we last talked, getting ready for this show, in terms of the efforts you all are doing in terms of supporting both the teachers in their reflective process and in the coaches. And, you know, I think this is work that Harvest Resources Associates has been famous for all along, is really fostering that critical reflection. And we've had the conversations about the difference, and you mentioned it earlier, Margie, about the difference between TA and coaching. I know that in the NAACES, the National Association of the Education of Young Children, just came out with a glossary of definitions of technical assistance. And it's really clear, at least in my work as well that I do, that one of the main differences between the two is technical assistance, or some people call it consulting, is about fixing problems. And that coaching is really about helping people be reflective about their practices, and in particular looking at next steps. You know, what kinds of changes or modifications would they like to take? And can you talk a little bit more about how that piece of it, because sometimes in the, you know, you were talking about the methods where they're just really moving people into looking at rating scales and getting better ratings, but talk more about how the fostering next steps and reflections, how that process is part of a deeper thinking process rather than a checklist, I got it done and mark it off my list, I accomplished it. Does that make sense?
This is Margie. I think Wendy mentioned earlier that part of our protocol is to ask people to explore what are the opportunities and possibilities here. And to me, that connects to what you're raising, Constance, that as we think through what do I know about myself and why I'm responding the way I am here, what do I think about the child's point of view and other perspectives that I need to keep in mind, voices that may or may not be right here with us and points of view, we then want to think about what are all the opportunities and possibilities this could lead us into. And then we have to become a decision maker. We have to sort of mind those, get them out, and then think about what does this suggest for me as a decision maker. I think teachers are decision makers all the time, and our goal is to help them be intentional in their decision making, not just reactive. And when you are thinking through what's happening, either on the spot or away from the children when you have time to catch your breath and really digest what's gone on and hopefully study some of the, and we use that word study in a serious way. You study some observation notes and some photos that you may have gathered, or the story that you and your coworker can tell, and you try to make some meaning out of it. What do we think is most significant here, and what opportunities does that present us with to build a stronger relationship with the children's families, to help the children build stronger relationships with each other, whatever our values and goals are that influence the kind of decisions we want to make and the next plan that we make. Not a long, extensive plan out into a month or two, which I find not very helpful if you're going to be responsive to children. You have to make a plan that is a potential possibility that we can explore next, and then you continue that cycle of observation and inquiry, and your planning continues to evolve as you assess and decide, did we choose the right thing? Does this seem to be moving forward the children's interests and their inquiry? Does it help us deepen our understandings? And if not, let's pick up one of the other opportunities that we considered.
Mm-hmm. I love the use of the word opportunity and possibility. I like so much better than goal or result or outcome. It has more of that deeper, broader spirit that you so well represent in your work.
We were really grateful to be able to work with colleagues in New Zealand and our own colleague Tom Drummond here in the Seattle area, who helped craft some of those phrases, I think, that really sharpened up our own thinking about what we want to be suggesting will be useful for teachers, to think in terms of opportunities and possibilities rather than goals.
And in your critical friends approach or model, in using that, is the coach in the partnership with the teachers in clarifying and identifying those opportunities, or is that something more you have set up a learning community of peers to do that reflecting? What role is the coach actually playing in helping foster that process of mining and actually coming up with the possibility, opportunity, next steps?
This is Debbie, and I would say it can take different forms depending on the context and what's needed out of a coach, but the coach is always in partnership with the teacher, and I think that's the key point, that the coach, when the coach is in the role of a critical friend, their job is to support the teacher in the teacher's thinking. So it's not about their own goals and expectations, and it's about the teacher's and where the teacher hopes to go. And I just wanted to add a word on that can be a challenging role for a coach, because many of us who serve as coaches were once early childhood teachers ourselves. And so we come into that role of coaching with our own early childhood teaching practice. So we have our head full of our ideas and our own beliefs. And what we try to do when we work with coaches is not to have coaches set that aside, because that's important. Their own teaching practice is important, but to be very aware of it and to see how that comes into play in their role coaching teachers. Because the point of coaching is not to get that teacher to do what you as a coach would do if you were the teacher. That is not the point to us. The point is to help the teacher clarify, articulate what she believes, and get her teaching in line with her own beliefs. So I think that's an important distinction that we try and make. And that's to us is the role of a coach as a critical friend.
And this is Wendy. I just want to add to what Debbie's saying, you know, and when we do our work that sometimes is directly with teachers, we really try to help teachers see themselves as researchers, that they are really in this process with the children, and that helping them think through their own decisions, what their beliefs and values are around the work that they're doing with the children in the classroom. uh-huh. and that sense of a community that you can go back to in your classroom to have these conversations. We're always very clear with the teachers and I think with the coaches that we work with that they're sort of on the ground day to day and their eyes are really observing and paying attention to what's happening in their classrooms. And so having the tools to use, such as the protocol, helps them really focus and be disciplined about talking about their work.
Yeah. Well, I know in my own work, I've started to use a term called, when I'm working with coaches, the fine art of followership. That it really is about following the teacher's thinking rather than leading them somewhere. You know, not us having that agenda, but to really foster followership. And how I love how you say that, you know, you're asking them to be aware of course, their own, you know, ideas and beliefs and experiences, but that can often get us tripped up into leading when really, as you say, it's not to set it aside, but to really allow, you know, in some ways, create the opportunity for the teachers. And that takes a lot of self-control, self-discipline, so to speak, on the coach's part sometimes.
I'm smiling here, Constance. This is Margie, because it so reminds me of the parallel between how coaches can be with teachers and how we want the teachers to be with children. And we really do want the teachers to be followers of the children's interests and pursuits and certainly to offer some guidance and some adult know-how. That's very useful. But if we work with children with very strong adult agendas without connecting them to who these children really are and what they already know, which is a huge fund of knowledge that we often ignore, then I think we, you know, we make the same mistake that we do when we're coaching adults. We want them to meet the standards and get in compliance, but we haven't figured out, if we're just doing it in that way, how to connect with what they already know, what they are deeply passionate about, and how that does relate to the standards and the early childhood goals that we have in our work.
Yeah, very much so. And since you kind of touched on that a little bit, Margie, I wondered if this would be a good time for you to talk a little bit more about your, you know, the longing you said you have about dealing with the current expectations and how it feels like some of it's getting a little smothered by expectations and standards for the real true spirit of what we're up to. Do you want to give that a little bit more voice at this point?
Well, I do feel like these standards are very important, and being accountable to high-quality, thoughtful, intentional practices is what we all strive for. But if we are only looking at the standards and not looking at the children, not looking inside ourselves, I think we often can't make a connection, and we're acting in a more robotic way, if indeed we even are trying to embrace those standards. It's like the idea of, you know, we forget the intention behind what we set out as a standard in the profession sometimes. So we talk about teachers need to have schedules, and then what happens is the teachers are focused on their schedule and on the clock and not on the children. And we have, you know, particular guidelines that we think are really important for how an environment should be set up. But we don't take the time to work with the teachers to say, and how is this furthering your ability to form a strong relationship with the children, to get insights into their learning process? It's almost as if the standards are disconnected from the everyday work and what's on the teacher's mind. And sometimes it has to do with the emphasis that we give as coaches or consultants or people who are trying to bring forward these standards to the teachers, or even a director in a program who does staff orientation and only stresses health and safety and regulations and never stresses what we're really about here is paying attention to the teaching and learning process. And we're going to set up some structures to support you to pay attention to that. I think really we feel so pressed by meeting these standards and moving ourselves on the rating scales and meeting the criteria that they become an end in themselves and not a tool to help us get deeper in our thinking about our work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely. And you mentioned something also, is that it is something that can be set as a tone inside an organization. And the tone of how organizational leaders present the importance, as you say, of standards or expectations. But in order to do that, they have to be very clear about really what are their beliefs and values about children in that program. I think that might be something not all programs, they might have it in their mission statement, but not alive and well in conversation and practice. And I know that the speaking of, articulating, stopping to even think about what are your values is a major piece of your work. And Debbie, I know that you talked some about the importance of this. Do you want to say a little bit more about that?
Yes, I would love to talk about core values all of the time. And I do talk about core values all of the time. And I think you're so right, Constance, that in a time when there is, when we are just swamped with a lot of information about standards and quality guidelines, which are all important, but those standards can't be what is driving our work. There has to be something more important driving our work, our core values, our core beliefs. And I think that's true in organizations. I also think that's true for individual teachers. And I also think that's true for coaches, that we have, at Harvest Resources, we have taken a lot of time to really think about our own core values. And so we help coaches do that in our work because it puts us in a better place to help others align their work with their core values. And I think, you know, when you were talking, I was thinking about how often I hear people talking recently about getting back to the basics in terms of professional development. And I don't disagree with that. I think that there is a lot of reason to get back to the basics. But I think the basics for us in our work are things like, who am I as a teacher? Who do I want to be as a teacher? What do I believe about children and how they learn? What do I believe about families? What do I believe about the teaching and learning process? Those kind of questions are the questions we try and return to again and again and again in whatever work we're doing and for ourselves. And I think unless and until we really start addressing those questions and have honest discussions about them, I don't think you're going to get the change in any classroom that's really needed to sustain quality. As Margie's saying, you might hit the standards, but I don't think you're going to get to go much beyond them.
Yeah, that sustainable piece.
Mm-hmm.
I call it the sticky part.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It can't just land, it has to stick.
That's it.
Yeah. I know that, Wendy, you used the term back mapping. Could you talk more about what you mean by back mapping?
Well, I think in terms of the work that we've been doing, and again, I want to say that the standards are important, and they're very real. Those standards and requirements and assessments are real for teachers. And we ask teachers to really trust us, and just to say again what Debbie said, to allow the standards not to guide your work, but that your vision should be guiding your work and your beliefs and your values should be guiding your work. And one of the things we found is when we sit with teachers in communities of practice or we're with coaches in a community of practice, and we've done some work around the observations of children and looking at their work, that very often what we find is when they pull the standards out, after they've done this meaningful work for themselves in their observations, that very often they find that those forms get filled out a lot faster because they have the information that they need in a very real way. Mm-hmm. And that they're doing it in a community of practice. They're asking these very thought-provoking questions from the Thinking Lens protocol, and it really helps them inform the work that they need to do, that paperwork, for lack of a better word, that they need to do.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Well, I wonder if we're kind of closing in on the end of the show, and there's a couple of questions I would like you, all three of you perhaps, to respond to is, what do you feel in the role you are in fostering and facilitating this broader and deeper thinking of both teachers and the coaches? What are some of the challenges that you really are facing in accomplishing this, let's call it sustainable change at both the levels of the coaches and at the teachers? What are some of the challenges you've had to cope with, deal with, face?
Well, this is Debbie, and I'll take a stab because we brought one up prior in the conversation, which was I think there's a challenge for people that this is a new model, and people don't have a lot of experience. Really, we don't have a lot of models for it in our larger society right now of taking the time to talk in depth about our beliefs and our values and aligning our work and our lives with them. So that's different for people, and it is a risk in a lot of ways for people to start engaging in those discussions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is Wendy, and I'll say that it really goes back, I think, for me, in addition to what Debbie's saying, the idea of giving teachers the opportunity to practice hearing, again, their own voices and feeling valid about the work that they're doing. One of the things we ask teachers to do who are in sessions with us and having these experiences with us is we have to give them permission to be in the moment with us and to honor their work and to really honor the time that we have together.
Mm-hmm.
And they value hearing that their work is meaningful in this way. They're talking about it. So I would say that's another challenge, is helping people get in the habit of knowing that what they think and how they think about their work is important.
Yes, yes. Especially in the face of all things coming.
This is Margie. I just wanted to jump in to follow up on that. I think, you know, taking the risk to think in a different way really means that you have to let go of this notion that somebody else is in charge of what's going on. Somebody else is calling the shots and telling you what you should do. Teachers have lost their sense of agency. They've lost their sense of internal authority that I think if they could recover, they would see why these standards are meaningful. But they get experienced as some outside mandate and thing that has to be checked off on a list. And I think it's very easy for people whose job it is to monitor and hold people in compliance to those standards to fall into bureaucratic thinking, not into encouraging the teachers to think through the meaning of the standard and how it could be useful for them in their work. So the combination of the challenge of the people who are doing the work, the actual practitioners, not feeling like they have any power or any agency or any role, and then the mentality that comes out in people who are trying to get others to hold themselves accountable to the standards, I think both of those can be challenges for this way of thinking. And what I find really happens when you call people to their deepest longings and you call people to what do they really wish they could be doing in their work with children, what do they wish they really could be seeing teachers doing if they're a monitor and so forth, set the little rating scale aside, set all those standards aside for a moment and look inside your heart and think about what do you believe these children deserve, what do these teachers deserve, and try to connect with that in a deeper way. I think it will help you get past the I can't and the loss of power that you experience often in your work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know you mentioned that earlier. We talked about it, is what do the children or the teachers deserve? What a great protocol question, so to speak. you know, in terms of that is a really provocative question. And I find that a lot of the challenge we have right now is the them that is holding these standards accountable often are the funders, not even the people in our field, but the funders. And it seems that that would be a great question if we could get that question back up to the funders.
That's why it's been so valuable for us to look at other early childhood systems outside of the U.S. You know, the most talked about one are the schools of Reggio Emilia in Italy, but we found many of the Canadian provinces, certainly our colleagues in New Zealand and Australia, have carved a different way out through some of these questions, that they are more values-based and more focused on what do they really believe childhood is about and what do they believe children deserve. And seeing some other models outside of your own paradigm is so helpful. It's such a wake-up call. I remember, Debbie, when you came back from New Zealand, how you said, do you remember how you said it? Now that I've seen this, I can never be the same, or something to that effect.
Yeah, absolutely. That, you know, you come back and think, oh, no, I have to change things. But the truth is, just by seeing it, you're changed. And you won't see things again in a different way. It takes away all the yes buts to go there, that we have a tendency to say, yeah, but we can't do it here and we can't do it there. But there's really no reason we can't do it here. We're the only obstacle in our way.
Yeah, that's the, let's focus on the both and. Yeah. Well, and as we come to a close, here are two questions. One is, do you want to give voice to what you, incredible successes you feel you have actually been having, and or...
Hello?
Hello?
I've lost her again.
And, you know, last time we ended up staying on the air, so we might still be on the air even though we've lost Constance. So any successes you want to talk about?
Well, I think we could talk about the success. The biggest success for me has been that we have teachers who look forward to coming to coaching meetings, coming to training sessions, that it once you get teachers engaged with this model, you find that it becomes an important part of their practice, something that they find meaningful, as Wendy says, something that they look forward to. They crave the opportunity to actually put these observations that they're doing of children to use and to talk about the greater purpose of their work.
And in working with them, this is Wendy, when we show a genuine interest in the children and the work that the teachers are doing, they rise to the occasion every time. They are excited about talking about their work. And as Debbie says, they look forward to coming and to showing what it is that they've been doing. And this idea of going back and trying things and meeting up with children's minds becomes a new way of them looking at their work.
You're reminding me of so many people who have come up and talked to us and say, had said they thought they were going to leave the field, but now they can see their work in a different way. To me, that's one of the biggest successes that we have as well.
That's right. Wonderful.
I just want to add on that one other quick thought, that I sometimes hear this notion out there that this kind of this level of reflective practice is great for very experienced, very mature teachers, but this is not something that is appropriate for starting teachers. And I just want to really challenge that notion, that that hasn't been part of our experience at all, that we have found diverse groups of teachers at all levels of experience, not only capable, but in need of this level of reflection. So I just want to put that out there, that to me that has never been part of our experience.
That kind of would go back to the notion that if you think information alone is holy, then you would want to save the thinking and reflection for later.
Exactly.
And as opposed to really, it's more important that we know how to learn rather than what you're learning. And even the notion of how we approach children in our programs is, you know, we've spent years and years trying to bust the model that the content of what they know is more important than them having both the joy of learning how to learn, you know, the value of play, as well as just how to be human and get along with each other.
Right.
You know. Yes. Well, I have been so grateful that the three of you have joined the show and added your very thoughtful and, you know, you guys have been doing this a long time and being advocates for, you know, I guess you call this a new model. To me, it feels like the old model, and it's really, you haven't let go. And so thank you very much for sharing your thoughts, your practices, your passion, because I think our field needs it, and we're lucky to have you amongst us in your leadership and in your thinking. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Constant.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Constant.
Yeah. And I just want to bring people's attention. We do have a blog that goes along with this radio show. And on our blog, Coaching Connections Radio blog, which you can find the link on the show site here, we have listed the Harvest Resources information. There's a page on our blog called Guest Speakers, and you can find more information about Harvest Resources, how to contact them, and some of the work that they're currently doing. And we would, of course, love to have your comments on the blog about what you think and some of the provocative statements, perhaps our speakers here, Wendy and Debbie and Margie, what they've said and how that's impacting you. So, again, thank you, ladies, for being with us. And I am hoping we are going to have lots of people listening to this show. I think you will be creating a great deal of thought for people. Again, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Until next month, this is Constant Hine with Coaching Connections. Bye-bye now.